Hello, West Liberty. This is Hope Bowman. You are listening to WGLZ 91.5. We are college radio, and we are passionately vocal. Welcome to part four of our four-part passionately vocal interview series. Today, I am incredibly excited to bring you a distinctive discussion with someone whose career spans more than three decades in broadcasting, political coverage, and investigative journalism. My guest is Dave Elias, the chief political correspondent for the Gulf Coast News. Over the years, Dave has interviewed Presidents Donald Trump and Barack Obama, earned top reporting awards from the Associated Press and the Florida Association of Journalists, and was named the number one Florida political reporter to follow by the Washington Post. His storytelling has taken him to Washington, D.C., Miami, New York City, and beyond, covering corruption, breaking national stories, and helping audiences better understand major issues like the Florida insurance crisis. It is truly an honor to have him on the show today. Dave, thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thanks so much for inviting me.
Yeah, I appreciate it so much. I know you've had such a long career and a successful career at that. To start us off, can you take me back to the beginning and what first sparked your interest in broadcasting and journalism?
Oh, gosh. I was probably about 10 years old, and I got my first Mr. Microphone. And that was a microphone back in the late 70s and early 80s that you bought, and then you could turn it on, and your voice actually went over an AM or FM radio. And so I used to write up my own little newscast and do my own little show, and my neighbors could hear me, my next-door neighbors could hear me. It really didn't broadcast very far, but that was when I really developed my passion. And I started my career in radio. Probably many of your viewers, our listeners, are too young to remember WSTV in Steubenville, Ohio, and WRKY, or it was then Rocky 103, which is a top 40 radio station. And I started my career in radio, and I worked in the Steubenville-Weirton area radio for many years. I worked at Womp FM in Bel Air, Ohio at that time. KQV Radio in Pittsburgh. I was a correspondent for them. And then in 2000, I saw that TV or radio news was changing. And radio, with the advent of, you know, the internet and everything, was really starting to go downhill at that time. So I decided to jump into television. I went to work at WTRF Channel 7, and I was with Channel 7, I think, for about 12 years. And then I was starting to think about retirement, and I thought, I really want to end my career in Florida. So I came here to Fort Myers, Naples TV market, where I have been now for 13 years here. So really, this is now the longest place I have been in my career. And so I cover a lot of political news and, you know, a lot of breaking news here on NBC and ABC television in the Fort Myers market.
Yeah, I do want to cover a lot about from, like, your start and to now. And so I do want to know, what about storytelling grabbed you so early on?
You know, when most kids my age at 10, 11 were listening to radio, because back then, you know, we didn't have the internet and we didn't have CDs yet, mind you.
Yeah.
So I was listening to talk radio on the AM dial. And I would venture to say that, you know, certainly people your age, for the majority, do not listen to AM radio. In fact, they probably couldn't even find the AM dial on their car radio.
Yeah.
But that's what I was listening to back then. I was listening to talk shows. I was listening to radio news. And I always wanted to know what's happening, what's going on. And my passion for that, I wanted to someday to be that person to let people know what's going on in their community, in their state, where they live. And, you know, I had some very great mentors back in those days, Wendy Vogel, Charlie Calabrese. Those were all local radio names. Debbie Mills, those were all local names that were big in Ohio Valley radio at that time. And television, I, you know, grew up watching Brenda Dainhart, Red Donnelly, Sherry McCutcheon. So those were all people that I later ended up working with, quite honestly.
Yeah, and you hear a lot about kids that they say what they want to be something when they grow up, but that never really follows through. But that seems like it really was in the cards for you.
It really was. And, you know, I loved acting and theater, but I realized that was going to be difficult, and I was probably going to have a hard time making a living acting.
Yeah.
And I really didn't want to starve. So I thought radio and television would be... I wasn't ever sure I would get into television because I just loved radio.
Mm-hmm.
But radio, you know, was starting to decline, and I jumped ship and moved to television. And but my days in radio, I cherish and remember, and even being mm-hmm. on radio with you today is an honor. And I might just add, when we're going way back, right out of high school into college, I had gone to Salem College in West Virginia, outside of Clarksburg, and I started actually that first summer out of high school, WVBC, which was the voice of Bethany College, that radio station was just coming on air.
Yeah.
I suppose that would be your competitor. And so I actually started there. It was called The Todd and Dave Show, and I did that for an entire summer before going on to Salem College. So that was my very first time on public radio.
Yeah. You mentioned that your career began in Steubenville, and I've seen that you hosted your own radio show called The Voice of the Valley. Can you explain like what that experience was like for you as a young reporter?
Yeah. Yeah, so obviously I was much younger, but that was in the early 1990s. You know, Bill Clinton was president, and, you know, there was so much controversy. There was never a lack of news to cover or topics to cover. And while my talk show was supposed to be locally oriented, you know, and focus on local issues, there were many times where the national political news dominated the news source for that day. And so we really focused on a lot of, you know, national topics. But, you know, I had the pleasure of interviewing senators like, you know, Jay Rockefeller, Robert Byrd, all of whom are out of government now. Robert mm-hmm. Byrd has since passed away. But those are all people that early on in my career I, you know, interviewed and got to learn so much from. And so radio was such a great training ground for me.
Mm-hmm. You also worked in Pittsburgh, and then you later worked in the Wheeling-Steubenville area. Can you explain to me how those earlier jobs like shaped your skills?
Well,
as a kind of
reporter? Yeah, for Pittsburgh, I worked for KQV Radio, KQV All News 1410, and I'm not sure they're even still on the air,
yeah.
Unfortunately. And WSTV AM was a powerhouse. It was the number one station in the Steubenville market back in those early days, and it has now gone defunct, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
So, I worked for KQV as an Ohio correspondent. So whenever I got big news in Ohio, I was always going on the air for KQV with my stories.
Mm-hmm. You've uncovered a lot of major investigative stories, mm-hmm. and a lot of people remember your national story involving the two Ohio police chiefs who were arrested in connection to Sarah Jessica Parker's surrogate. How did you uncover
yes.
that story, and what was like the process behind the scenes of that?
So at that time, Sean Hervey was the Harrison County prosecutor in Harrison County, Caddo, Ohio. And there was word that two police chiefs in Yorkville and Martins Ferry, I believe, had conspired with a tabloid magazine. And they had broke into the home of the surrogate for Sarah Jessica Parker and Matthew Broderick. And they had taken pictures of the belly cast because she was the surrogate mother for their two children.
Oh, wow.
Well, there had been word of this that had gotten out. Sean Hervey was appointed as the special prosecutor. I had a close working relationship with him, and he called me and he said, "You're not going to believe this, but do you want the exclusive on it? I'm going to be trying the case." So, anyway, I went from there, and that was my source, and that's where I went with it. So it ended up being a huge story. I followed it till the very end. In fact, there are clips of it still exist on YouTube today.
Yeah. Would you say that was like a story that changed or like taught you the most, and something that you still carry with you to this day, or?
Yeah, you know, when I broke that story, it wasn't long before CNN and, you know, Entertainment Tonight and all, because they were such prominent figures and no one really even knew that they had, I mean, they knew there was a surrogate mother that was going to have children for them, but they didn't know that that surrogate was living in the Ohio Valley.
Yeah.
So this story became of national attention, and I had, you know, stations from across the country contacting me and, you know, major outlets wanting the story. And that really was perhaps one of the biggest stories of my career. You know, during 9/11, I went up to, I was in television, of course, then, and went up to New York. I did a two-part series overlooking what was left, just rubble of the World Trade Center, and how Ohio Valley Steel was going to be used to build back the World Trade Center. And that was another big story that, you know, I was on top of the CBS headquarters with CBS reporters from around the country. And Dan Rather, who was the main anchor of CBS back then, you know, just two spaces away from me. So, you know, that was another big moment in my career. As you mentioned, I interviewed President Barack Obama in Ohio. I interviewed President Trump here in Florida. So, you know, I've been blessed to interview some really big names.
Yeah, and speaking of President Donald Trump and Barack Obama, what was the preparation process when you were getting ready to speak with a sitting president?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
Your preparation process, what was that like when you were getting ready to interview someone as big as a president like that?
Well, you know, you just, I always just want to, I want to present them as human beings. So I try to, you know, I always start with warming up, you know, and trying to show that this is more than just a president of the United States. This is, you know, this is a guy who believes this, and it may not be what you believe. And then, you know, get into just introducing them maybe on a lighter side, and then, you know, ask some of the tough questions, you know, that are impacting the local area, because I can ask them about national topics, but you can get that on the nightly news. You can get that on CNN or Fox. So I want to talk about things that impact people that watch me on local television news.
Mm-hmm.
So I really try to take the big issues that are facing people in our market, and that's what I try to hone in on and focus on.
Yeah. Do you remember the moment right before each interview, like what was going through your mind?
Well, when I was interviewing President, there were two things. When I interviewed President Trump, that was during COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had to wear masks. And, you know, President Trump was pretty much against masks, although he would wear them. But he was against them. And I remember saying, Mr. President, since you're not wearing a mask, are you okay with me taking mine off? Because I knew this was going to be an interview that was going to live forever online. And I just, I didn't like that look of a mask. So he said, I'll never forget his words. He said, yes, we've got to live. So I took off my mask and I proceeded with the interview. And then with President Barack Obama, I had gone out in Ohio. I believe it was Cambridge, Ohio. And I was going to interview him at a women's shelter for battered women. And it was this beautiful scenic background. And I thought really we would go outside to do that interview. And we ended up doing it in a closed shelter where they like, people donate clothes, and it was such an odd place, but the Secret Service had told me we can't do this outside because we did not prepare for Secret Service to have him outside in an open area. So unfortunately, we had to do the interview in front of a clothes closet with a bunch of unfolded clothes, and there are pictures of that online as well.
Oh, wow.
And I just thought, what a sloppy, ugly background for for an interview with a president.
Was there anything that surprised you about either of the interviews, like something that stood out that you didn't expect?
Well, with the President Trump interview, you know, we had gotten out of in the story, the president told me that he had just ordered a stop of water releases from Lake Okeechobee here in, you know, that's the big hole in the middle of Florida that you see on the map. And that water was flowing towards the Fort Myers area, and it was creating algae and green algae blooms and, you know, really toxic water. And it was because some of the water was polluted. And so he told me that they ordered a stop to it. So I got out of the interview saying, you know, breaking news, we've just learned that the president has ordered stops of water releases. And that was a big deal here at that time because our water was green. And so I called the Army Corps of Engineers to think, I better just double check and make sure. But I'm thinking, this is the president of the United States. So, you know, but we have to check and double check everything. So I called them and they said, no, Dave, we are not stopping water releases. I said, could you run it up the chain of command? Because I literally just got out of interview with President Trump. And this is what he told me. So 30 minutes later, and then they called me and said no, and they had to make one more call, and it was like 10 till 6, which, you know, the 6 o'clock news is the big newscast. They called me at 10 till 6 and said, Dave, we are not stopping water releases. They're going to continue to flow. So I had to go on the air and say, look, here's what President Trump told me, but we've confirmed this isn't true. And it shocked me that he would make a statement like that that was not true. And in hindsight now, you know, I can tell you after the fact that those water releases never did stop, that they did continue. And so that ended up being a pretty big story here because we were given incorrect information.
Wait, so you said you went on live on air and said that there were going to be stops before, like...
According to President Trump, he had stopped them. Yeah, so I attributed everything to the president, you know. And then, because it was breaking news, he just told me. So we played the soundbite of the president saying, I ordered the releases stopped, no more water releases, we won't have any more releases, it's all going to be fine. So, boom, breaking news. I was the only one that got an interview with him here. So, you know, the Fox station, the ABC, the CBS station, none of those stations had the story. And then that was in the 5 o'clock news. But by 6 o'clock, we confirmed that was not the case. So we had to go back on and say, look, we told you, the president said this, we played the bite again. However, we've talked with the Army Corps of Engineer who controls the water releases, and they say not going to happen.
Yeah, that has to be tough on your end, putting out false information when you didn't really mean to, you know.
Well, you know, yeah, but as long as you know, in this business, as long as you attribute your sources, you're safe and protected. You know, we had soundbite of the president making the comment, and, you know, politics has changed a lot over the years. You know, people would spin and perhaps twist. But in 2025, the political landscape has changed drastically. And now outright, mistruths, lies are often told. And, you know, some call them alternative facts. But there's really no such thing, let's be honest.
Yeah. I do want to get into a little bit of what advice, like, you would give about staying confident and composed, because I know a lot of young journalists get nervous in interviewing high-profile people, as if you have, and me too. But I would say I grew up in a very outgoing family, so I'm not really as shy. But what advice would you give to someone that might be nervous about doing something as well as prominent as presidents of the United States?
Well, you know, you have to go in it with confidence, and you have to know your facts. You have to know what's important. And, you know, if you get something that isn't true, now, in that case, I had no way of not knowing because he had just gotten out of a meeting. So I don't know. But typically when an official comes out and tells me something, you know, I can take it to the bank. If, you know, the mayor of Fort Myers or Naples or Steubenville comes and tells me, Dave, this is it, and they're doing an interview and we have them on camera. But you really have to be confident. You have to trust your sources. And you have to realize that, look, we're equals. No one's better than anybody else. This person isn't better than me. I don't even know that they're smarter than me. But you really have to go in with a lot of confidence, know your stories, and don't be afraid to ask the tough questions, yeah, even when it hurts.
Yeah, you're known for a very persistent, aggressive reporting style, I guess you could put it that way. How did you develop that approach?
you know, I guess just watching peers over the years and watching so much news, you know, I never wanted to emulate one person. But what I did was there were strengths in certain people that I grew up watching, and I wanted to have their strengths. You know, Anderson Cooper on CNN, you know, he's very calm, he's very to the point, he's very matter of fact. So, you know, I take over the years, I've taken bits and pieces of people I've either worked with or greatly respected in the industry. And I want to say I have little bits and pieces of all of those folks, and that's what made Dave Elias who he is. And, you know, nobody wants a softie. You want somebody who's going to go in and get the answers and not be afraid to ask the tough questions. And, you know, I'm friends with a lot of political figures down here. That's why I get a lot of the exclusives. And I told them, look, we have a friendship, you know, but when it comes to a big story, I'm still going to ask you the tough questions, and your answers are going to be your answers, but don't think I'm not going to ask them.
Oh, yeah.
So I think I have that mutual respect with people. And look, it takes years to get that confidence. And, you know, the Dave Elias of 2025 is not the Dave Elias of 1987.
Yeah, for sure. So I know that investigative work can be stressful and heavy. How do you deal with the pressure?
Well, you're going to laugh, but as I get older, you know, I want to retire in 3 years. And, you know, I just signed a 3-year contract here with Gulf Coast News. And, you know, my goal was always to end my career here. But as I get older, you know, the stress seems to be more stressful. And, you know, you have so many more venues. It's not just, hey, you're on television now. You're on social media. You're on the website. You're, you know, you live forever in, you know, on the internet now. The political landscape has changed. There's a lot of stresses that I'd say I didn't have, you know, 30-some years ago when I got in the business. Now things can be listened to and re-listened to, and, you know, it can be stressful. It really can be stressful. But, you know, I've learned at the end of the day to let go. So if something didn't go right, or I didn't get the interview, or I didn't say this right, at the end of the day, let go and start looking for the story tomorrow already. And I guess that's one beautiful thing in this business, is that when you really learn to just let go, it's already happened. There's nothing you can do about it. Move forward to your next story.
Yeah, and like you said, social media has began to get a lot bigger over the years. So I can understand from where you started to from now. I bet you that can be a little bit stressful from media coverage and how other people perceive things.
Well, Hope, I'm going to tell you, when I started in the business, you had to have a license to even be on air. So the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, gave you a license, and you took an oath and you made a promise to be truthful and honest because you were using the public airwaves. Now, that process, I still have my original FCC license. You don't even need an FCC license. And secondly, anybody can go on social media and pretend to be an expert or pretend to look like a news person who works for a company that holds you accountable. Many of these social media bloggers or whatever they want to refer to themselves as, they have no accountability. So they can go on the air, they can say whatever they want. They're not held to the same standard as TV or radio journalists, you know, or print journalists. So that is, for me, what is most frustrating, is that a lot of this opinion reporting, people, they can't see the line, and it's blurred. They have blurred the line between what is news and what is honestly, truly fake news, and just not factual. Mm-hmm. And for me, that is the most discouraging part of social media. And now we've got AI that are generating people that don't even exist. And so we're seeing this on our social media feeds, and we're wondering, is this real? Is this not real? It kind of looks real. And for older people, it's almost impossible for them to discern what's real and what isn't.
No, even me, I watch TikTok and I watch all these things, and I genuinely feel as if it's real. And then I look at the comments and people are saying, no, that's AI. And I'm like, wow, I am so fooled. And it's actually insane. It really is.
Well, and AI is in its infancy. Can you imagine at the rate it's going, where it's going to be, in another couple of years, let alone 10 years down the road? There are stations in this country right now that are experimenting with AI-generated anchors who never mess up, who never make a mistake. They look perfect. They're beautiful. And basically, they're fed a script, and they're sitting there reading, but you're never going to see that person at your local grocery store or at a local event or, you know, and so that's where I really, really worry about this business and where it will end up.
Does it make you feel better that you're going to be done in 3 years? And
I thank God I made it. I think I'm making it out at a good time, unless something changes. But, you know, I've made the preparations to begin my retirement in 3 years. So I hope nothing changes that. I'll be 62 and ready to go. But yeah, you know, and I like to think I really got into radio when the I call it the golden years, and the golden years of radio was really the 1940s and 50s, but before television existed. And I felt like I was still in that because AM radio was still a dominant force, and then I saw that demise, and then FM radio was still pretty strong, but then with the advent of internet and Pandora and all of these other apps, the FM radio has declined, and people really, unfortunately, don't even listen to it much in their cars anymore. I do, but I came from that era. But your generation, I'm shocked if they're still driving around listening to the radio in their car.
Yeah, and that scares me a lot because, as you know, I'm a broadcasting major, and I plan to someday be maybe even in your position in sports. I'm not sure what exactly I want to do. But, yeah, that scares me a lot because I feel like AI is going to be taking over the world one day soon.
Well, I hope for your sake, and I hope for the sake, more importantly, of the viewers and listeners, that doesn't happen, because that will become a nightmare. And we really need people out there making the communication, making those bonds of trust. Losing that, it would be perhaps the greatest loss in the history of broadcasting.
Yeah. As we're wrapping up, I do want to get into a little bit about your awards and the impact you have made. I know you've been named the best reporter in Florida by the Associated Press. What do honors like those mean to you?
I'm going to be completely honest with you. A lot of people I work with in the business strive to get awards, and I'm not one of those people who need constant validation. I've had it. I don't even have all of, you have my bio that is on the NBC Gulf Coast website.
Yeah.
That I sent you, and not even all of the awards that I have received are on there. I'm just not somebody who looks for that. But while I'm honored to have received them, there is one in particular in my career that stands out, and that was the award from the Washington Post that I didn't even see coming or know existed. And people were calling me and saying, "Hey, the Washington Post just named you the best reporter in the state of Florida to follow in politics." And Florida, as you know, is a big state. I'm like, what? How do they know about me? So anyway, I had called the Washington Post, or no, I take that back. The Washington Post had called me to tell me, and I said, who determined this? And they said, your viewers. So in each market, they put up the question, who do you respect most? And the most people said they watched Dave Elias in the Fort Myers Naples television market in Southwest Florida, and that's who we trust. And that was viewers who gave me that word. It wasn't one or two people. It wasn't a table of three peers. It was a multitude of people who watch Gulf Coast News here on the Gulf Coast, and they said that I was the best reporter. So that's perhaps the most important validation I've received, because I know then that I truly am doing my job because the viewers said so.
That's really awesome, and it's awesome to like be able to be speaking to you right now, and I really am appreciative of your time. And you would say that.
Well, I appreciate this, and you know, I do. I've done many interviews like this with young journalists. I've given them advice, and you know, I'm glad that I'm able to share the knowledge that I've acquired over 38 years in the business now. And you know, I would share that anytime with anybody. And reach out to me on social media. I'm on Facebook. I'm on everything. So you can reach out to me on TikTok, whatever your form of is. You'll find Dave Elias of Gulf Coast News is out there if you want to talk.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you want to say to the viewers? Any, I guess, suggestions you have to them if they are looking to go into the path that you are?
Well, I would just tell you, stay true to it. And, you know, it's going to be a rough ride over the next 5 to 10 years. And I still think that radio and television are going to be here. I just don't know what they're going to look like.
Yeah.
But whatever it is, be adaptable, be able to adapt. And you know what? You've got to be better than AI. You've got to offer something AI can't. And what that is that you're able to create relationships with other people. The mayor of your city, your local councilman, your county commissioner, your governor, your state representative. Those are all people that you're able to create contacts with that AI yet can't do. So that is what, if anything, is going to save journalism, is that real bond that exists between human beings.
Awesome. And like I said, I'm really grateful for you coming in here today. I really appreciate it. And thank you so much.
Absolutely.
For sharing your experiences and all the insight you've gained over the years. It means a lot to have you here as we wrap up.
Well, great. It's great to be back in the Ohio Valley again, on the airwaves in the Ohio Valley. And, you know, let's talk again soon, Hope.
All right. Thank you so much.
Yes. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, this has been part 4 of our Passionately Vocal series. To everyone listening, thank you for tuning in to WGLZ 91.5 FM. I'm your host, Hope, and this has been a distinctive discussion. We will see you next time.